The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
Alright, you're welcome along to the GAR sponsored by AIB. It's the GAR on a Wednesday. It's a bit like last year, Conan, when we used to do it on a Wednesday. I'm in court tomorrow. So it's not, you know, that's the usual reaction you're going to get. I'm getting a beer license and I have to get this approved tomorrow. So we've to get this sorted today. So listen, we can all calm down. Why do you always panic when you hear about court? It's not always bad news.
I was going to say, which night out was it?
That's a conclusion I can understand you jumping to. But want to start off here. Obviously, Conan and Connor are here as usual. I want to start off, lads, and I know it's on Thursday, but Conor Callaghan's year 2017. Like, it's beyond belief. Someone tweeted out from Sports Joe Conan, and I don't know if it was you or not, but, like, I mean, this is his year, 2017, an All-Ireland Senior Hurling Club Championship. Anyone player around the country would probably be happy in their whole career with that. Like, I lost one in a final by a point. A Leinster Under-21 football, an Under-21 All-Ireland football, a Leinster Senior Championship, an All-Ireland Senior Championship. Now, he's almost here at a stage where this is a fairy tale career for 90% of players in the country. You're going to throw on top of that for an All-Star. You're going to throw on top of that Young Player of the Year. Then, the year's not over yet because he's back in club action again. So he's a Dublin Senior Club Hurling Championship and a Leinster Club Senior Hurling Championship that he won last week. Lads, that's just beyond belief, the level of what this fella's winning. And, like, I mean, Con, they always say that you need to lose a few to really appreciate. How much is Con appreciating this, lads? Come on, you know what I mean? He's not really, really understanding how unbelievable that is.
21 as well, and like, you put on top of that, I mean, some of the stuff that we didn't even get into that tweet. He was man of the match in under 21 All-Ireland final, man of the match in the Leinster final, which was 12 points he scored that day,
yeah,
against Kildare. He got the goals against Tyrone and Dublin, so it's not like he's
really
been part
important.
Of these amazing teams. He's been the leader front and front for all of them.
Yeah, and he's another one of these humble, quite, like, there's no chance you're going to say, well, Jesus, that's enough to go to anybody's head. Conor Callaghan's not that. He's a Kieran Kilkenny type fella.
Yeah.
He loves the game. He's immersed in the game. He's sensible. He ain't going anywhere. Like, if anything, this fella's just, do you know, he's almost like a young Henry Shefflin. He's almost machine-like. You know what I mean? It's not, I don't think he's the, would he say he's not flair? Not sure if he's that flair.
He has a bit of flair,
He's not flamboyant then. He has flair.
It's more automatic, you know, that he just does this
machine-like
stuff.
I almost think.
But it's a beautiful machine.
No, the goal in the All-Ireland final, of course, that's flair. I'm kind of maybe associating flair with reeling off and waving to the crowd, which they're not allowed to do. But he's almost, I think this fella's a Henry Shefflin in waiting, a machine that comes back year after year after year. And luckily enough for him, he's over underage next year, so he's not going to have this role of honour. But, like, I mean, he is going to have a role of honour because Coola and the Pearsig are almost 50-50. I don't want to write anyone off in semi-finals, so that could be another one. And he's a banker for Leinster, Dublin favourites for All-Star, All-Star Young Player of the Year, and then he's back with Coola again, who look really strong in Leinster and are actually hammering their way through Leinster. They're finding it more difficult in Dublin than they are in Leinster. So, like, I mean, there's no real slowing down for him. Coola are getting even better, even at football. Now, the only game he lost this year was Coola against St Jude's in, I think it was the Dublin quarter-final.
The only game at all.
Well, that was the only championship game.
He didn't
game
play the league, so when he didn't play, Dublin lost to Kerry. He wasn't part of it.
So, like, it's just unbelievable. I saw Paul Flynn, actually, some quotes from him last week. He was talking about how hardy he is. And, like, I mean, you know, everyone does weights, and there is a difference between players who are just hardy and there are difference with players who are just big from doing weights. You can hurt fellas that are big from doing weights, but you can't really hurt the hardy. You know what I mean? That inner strength, and it's hard to describe. Some lads have it. You call it wiry, or you call it just hardy. So, you know, some players just are not hardy, and you can go and bench press all you want, mate, but you're not hardy. There's a bit of a softness to you.
It's usually what skinny boys say to make themselves feel better. That's just water he has. He's not functional.
Ah, no, but you know what I mean. Hardy does not mean, or big and strong does not mean hardy.
Yeah, and we had a, I remember talking about before the All-Ireland final and the matchups, and we're like, oh, Conor Callaghan now coming into it on the crest of a wave. Yeah. You know what they're going to do? They're going to put wiry Cullen Boyle on him, yeah, to stick it into him straight away. And within a minute, he has a goal, you know?
Yeah. And that, and now, in fairness, Boyle did well on him for the rest of the game. But like, we're talking about a 21-year-old in our fine. Conn had almost done his part at that stage. Yeah. Not saying he would have sat back on it. But Flynn, anyways, was recalling the very first training session. And he says, I didn't think he was a hardy boy. I seen him play at underage and I didn't know a lot about him. So we're doing a tackle box. Delighted to hear Dublin are doing the tackle boxes. Like, I mean, you think they're so sophisticated and they've moved on, but they're doing that tackle box. That,
is it inside the square?
Yeah. And if you can find a drill that's more hateful than a tackle box, you'll be doing possible. Well. There is nothing enjoyable in that tackle box.
I call it the square of death. Like I said, I don't like it.
Oh, it's terrible. So there's four lads on each post, and you've got some lads beating at you, and you have to give one twos to these lads. And then he waits. He actually doesn't tackle you until you go to pass it to these lads, and then he's lamping in. It's just so frustrating.
It's torture. Like torturous. The technique of the tackle actually goes out the window after 30 seconds.
You just are hurting each other. You know, the tackler is lamping you with both hands. You're so tired, you're just throwing it to the lads around the corner. There's no, it's actually after the 20 seconds, there's no quality of anything in here.
Jim McGuinness apparently used to do those for 3 minutes.
Oh my God.
That? And that, every kind of every mistake, or every, you know, every time the technique was wrong, was punished with push-ups after the 3 minutes in the box.
So. And of course, McGuinness in his book will describe this as the most beautiful morning. The sun was shining and these fellas were giving their all for the
I could see it in their eyes. They loved it.
They wanted a win for Donegal, and these lads down puking and everything. But anyways, they're doing a tackle box, and I was in with him, and he hit me a dunt, and I was winded for about 30 minutes. I couldn't train. I was running around training, pretending I wasn't hurt. And I thought that was another great quote for Paul Flynn to admit, because the amount of times I've gotten hit in training and you just don't want to let on you're hurt and you're just still running around the place pretending everything's grand, but all you want to do is just curl up and because your stomach is cramped and it's gone and you're running around like a basically like a little wimp trying to pretend that you're okay and that you're not. So number two things, Dublin do tackle boxes and Paul Flynn is just like the rest of us. So there's two nice things that we've learned today. Right, lads, I have a little quiz for you next. Oh no, I hope you haven't read this doc so you'll know who this is.
I was going to cheat and I was like, I don't know where to start.
Alright, well, sir, anybody listening can partake in this quiz, so you have to tell me who said this. It's really about helping people to help themselves, to give people the gift of a cow. That's a classic quote. Right, so anybody listening will be a little bit bamboozled as to who's saying this, but this is our man Jim Bob Gavin. This is one of my favourite managers in the country. So it sounds very...
Jim Gavin said this.
All so right. It's a very obscure... You see, a lot of quotes need context, obviously. So he's saying it's really about helping people help themselves, to give people the gift of a cow. Anyways, he's doing a lot of great work in Rwanda, and they're bringing cattle over to people in Africa and they get a cow each, and it obviously sustains family life and they get an awful lot more out of it. And he flies the plane over. He does this every year, and I think he actually approached Boher to do this. So look, I mean, there's no doubt Jim Gavin is an honourable man, and that's a lovely gesture that he does. But on the back of him doing a bit of media work based around this Boher initiative, he went on Sean O'Rourke. So Sean O'Rourke brings up to him about the thing we talked on the podcast a lot, the joyless Jim Gavin, the Jim Gavin that won't laugh or won't smile after an All-Ireland final. And Jim Gavin says, humble Jim Gavin, now he's got his humble hat on now, so I'm excited for the players. I'm here to serve them. How many times have we heard him saying this? It's all about the players. It's not about me or the backroom team or the management team. I don't think I did anything wrong, did I? Like, you didn't really. I don't know whether you say you did something right or wrong, but I hate the way Jim Gavin forces this on people that it's not about me. I think the man is protesting too much. If Jim Gavin didn't play up to this nonsense, I would know Jim Gavin's this type of manager, that he doesn't want it about him. But if Jim Gavin doesn't smile after an All-Ireland or makes a point not even to enjoy lifting a cup with his player or whatever, Jim, that's going that little bit too far. They're not mutually exclusive. You can be all about the players and facilitate them, he loves that word, without looking like a joyless so-and-so after an All-Ireland final and making these points and keep referencing the fact it's not about me. People can read between the lines, Jim. Stop this humble stuff and that it's not about you. We understand good managers don't want it about them. You know what I mean? It's not the Alan Pardews and these fellas of the world of GAA. Like, you might pick out an example or two Davy Fitzgerald, for example. Like, I mean, yeah. He likes it to be a bit about himself, likes to make himself part of the story. Jim Gavin doesn't. We can draw that conclusion without you force feeding it.
Yeah, he's nearly gone beyond parody at this stage. And as you say, he doesn't really help himself with his actions. I remember he was asked in the press conference after the All-Ireland final, you know, does he have any sympathy for Mayo, you know, having lost in such a kind of devastating manner. And he was like, oh, well, sure, I know how we feel. We lost the league final this year. And not just because I was from Mayo, but I was like, Jim, come on. Like, this is our, you know, 8th or 9th All-Ireland final. This, you know, we haven't won one in so long. And you're comparing it to a league final to Kerry earlier on the year that you might not have cared so much about
anyway.
Yeah,
going for five. Was it 5 in a row or 4 in a row leagues?
4 in a row league titles, yeah. So I just think, as you say, people just don't. The longer he kind of proceeds with this kind of line, people just aren't going to buy it anymore.
Yeah, because I remember when Stephen Cluxton, I was critical of Stephen Cluxton. The first year Dublin won the All-Ireland in 2011, he booted away the ball with Tomás O'Shea. You could say that was maybe a rush of blood to the head. You'd forgive him for that. But he ran in down the tunnel after the game, right? And he didn't do the lap of honour with the rest of the team. And his reason for that was that I don't want to draw attention to myself. And, like, just a contradiction. Like, by doing that, everybody's talking to you. Yeah. Whereas if you just walk around the field, the back of the group, no one will even notice that you want to keep your head down. It'll be the lads jumping around and acting the maggot that will, you know. So I don't think he does that now anymore. But I don't even remember at the time he didn't go on the Late Late Show then the following week, again, because he doesn't like publicity. Then everyone's talking about that. And right, it's like, go to the Late Late Show, sit at the back, let somebody else speak, and no one will even notice. You know what I mean? I don't get that, and I see a little bit of that. Some of these things are actually drawing more attention on yourself when that's not what you want. And if Jim Gavin wants it to be about the players, no one had even noticed that he holds a cup or smiles after or puts his hand here. You think you're more human, and nobody will think that you're not all about the players, because we'd have a very good idea that you are, Jim.
It's like giving the charity and you're doing it anonymously, but telling everybody that you did it. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Well,
I didn't want the fuss, but it was me.
It's that kind of thing. But anyways, listen, unless
he really, really just loves Dublin, that's the only thing I can think of, because obviously the scenes at the very end of Final Whistle was a bit annoying. Like, you know, does he not enjoy winning? Like, and unless he just sees this as a service to his county, does he love them that much?
A devotion, a bloody monk in a ministry, yeah. Like no joy or anything. Anyways, listen, we've probably got on too much about that. He's an enigma, Jim Gavin, and I'd love to say we'll have him on the podcast to maybe discuss these things, but that's probably not going
frank
to happen.
Discussion.
To Mayo footballers, lads, and we've spoken on this podcast the minute I heard about this free April. The minute. And even though the CPA first initiated this, and I'm a big fan of the CPA, and I remember saying that I'm happy with everything CPA putting forward, but this April thing is a nonsense. So then the GEA borrowed this April thing in their proposal, and they run with this April thing. So what are the Mayo footballers going to do? Like, I mean, they've booked their training holiday in April.
Had to be us, didn't it?
But you couldn't make this up, Connor. But, like, I wouldn't even criticise Mayo for it, because you can't lose your players in the month before the provincial championships. Like, think about this. It's the most ridiculous, nonsensical thing that you could possibly think of, and Mayo are making a nonsense out of it. And I'd say Mayo, no problem. It's like these early season competitions. It's like the Railway Cups. If you want to drop out of them, lads, drop out of them. They're nonsense. If you don't want to go along with this, and we're all for more time for clubs, give clubs August rather than bloody April. Do you know what I mean? Let's give them a month which is actually of benefit to them and not hampering the county team. This has turned into a farce. Discuss.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. Like, what was it? Was it Mayo were playing May 13th against Galway?
Yeah. Yeah.
They've lost twice to Galway. They're not going, like, you know, theoretically they won't be allowed to have them until 2 weeks beforehand, not even 2 weeks before. That's ridiculous. Like, I don't blame Mayo for breaking this rule, because it was always going to happen. Like, you can't have players playing with the club, not only risking getting injured but not being part of the camp two weeks before.
Yeah, but they're fairly brazen about this, lads. You know, like, I mean, the one thing about, right, we'll train with the county and we'll play a couple of league games and play the game. Stephen Rochford is just like, April the 11th to the 18th, this lad just right bang in the middle of it. Yeah. This lad just said, here, look, forget about this stupid rule, we're bringing them off for that. It's just blatantly cheeky. And that's it. So, like, inter-county, not only is it against the rules of April being free for clubs, it's also against the rule of inter-county training camps are not permitted to take place until Friday the 4th of May.
But sure, like, the GAA have changed the calendar so much that people are probably going to contravene that anyway. But we got actually a draft of the fixtures that a draft of fixtures for 2018 actually. So, and it actually looks reasonable. You know, there's two rounds of league at the first two weekends in April that you have your county players. Then the county players away on camp, which is a month out from the Galway game. And then there's another round of starred league games on the last weekend of April. Okay. I think that's perfect.
That's
fair.
Not too bad.
Do you know what I mean? Because I think somebody mentioned that there might be four league games in April with all the county players. Like, did they ever think that actually that the Mayo players were going to play four league games, 4 weekends in a row, and then only be brought in by Stephen Rochford like 10 days out from the Galway game?
So you're getting Mayo, you're getting the inter-county lads for three league games in April?
Two. This is under the draft fixtures at the moment. So the first weekend in April, that's assuming the Mayo don't reach the league final, because if they reach the league final, they're on the first weekend in April. So last weekend in March, first weekend in April, league games with the county players. Second weekend in April, league games with the county players. Then they go off in their training camp, and then we don't, you know, clubs don't have them.
Yeah.
But that looks fairly reasonable.
See, like, you're getting them for half of April. See, it's very vague when they say April's free. Like, I mean, what does that really mean? Yeah. You know, does that mean there's a ban on intercounty, or does that mean that intercounty lads can play games but not train? Like, it's so vague. Yeah. Nobody really knows what the hell it is.
And it wasn't even a rule. It was just advice. Like, it'd be good to keep April free for clubs for whatever reason.
The other counties are probably delighted now. Oh, Mayo have said it, so we're just going to follow suit. You know what I mean?
But your Mayo have also now their championships put back until after Mayo.
In the draft as well, the championship doesn't start until the second weekend in September, which is after the All-Ireland. But that kind of makes sense anyway, because the last few years, because Mayo have been in the qualifiers, we've only played two rounds of the championship before the All-Ireland anyway. So, and they've been run off. So it'll be like, you're looking at the moment that the senior championship will be run off in 6 weeks immediately after.
But that's right. Like, a lot of counties are learning that they don't mix, that you end one and start another. And I think the more counties do that, like Leash, Armagh, all these... We don't start this thing in early, and Dublin are doing it next year too, I'm pretty sure, that let's wait until it's over and start the other one. Then there's no crossover, there's no arguments, there's no nonsense. The next step on from that is to shorten the intercounty season a bit more, give that month of August to clubs. There we are, aren't we laughing? There's the solution. I don't like talking about county secretaries' reports at all, lads. I don't like it. I think the county secretaries in the GA landscape aren't, you know, they're not news, but it's always a slow time of the year this year. There's very little going on, so the county secretary reports all seem to make headlines, and these are fellas that within their counties, not many people, not every one of them, but you know, might not take much heed of what they say, but suddenly they've got a national platform to give their personal opinions on, which I always find it a really weird dynamic. But the Tyrone one, Dominic McCaughey, said something interesting. He said something interesting. You like this, Conor, because you're a conspiracy theorist and you're from Ulster and you will see the bad in any new thing, and that's just your reality up there. That's
rate
just,
of progress.
It's not your fault. That's just the culture up there. That no, we Ulster says no, basically, and that's just the reality. So he actually makes a fairly good point, really, and I thought it was interesting. So he's talking about the Super 8s. So he says part of the reasoning for these so-called Super 8s, I love so-called before, like he's getting the dig in.
Rubbish it.
Because he's immediately rubbished them, right? So stage is to ensure that more high-quality games of football at a height of the season will take place. But now, this is the interesting bit. Unfortunately, this cannot be ensured. There may be some high-quality games, but there's a greater chance that there will be nothing at stake in the final games within each group. And there is a possibility that some teams may decide to play for a desired outcome. That's the interesting part, which could potentially lead to a preferred All-Ireland semi-final fixture. Now, so I've just created this hypothetical scenario that could arise, and I'm putting Leash in the...
really hypothetical.
It's really hypothetical, and I'm putting Leash into the Super 8. So, for example, and I want your advice on whether this can happen, because I'm not sure. I know the weaker team plays at home first. You know, I think they tried to set it up as much as possible that the last game will mean something, but that's obviously not a perfect science, and it's not always going to happen like that. So say Kerry are through to win their first two games, right? They're through to the Ireland semi-final, they've won them by a big margin, and they're playing Leash, right, in the last game. Leash and Kerry would have a fairly good relationship based on the fact that they always beat us, right? So they would have no issue, they would have no issue, except for the minor All-Ireland in 96, right? So it's in this hypothetical scenario that I come up with. So if they beat Leash, right, Tyrone will go through in second place if Tyrone win. But if they lose to Leash, Leash will go through. Will Kerry throw that game to get Tyrone out of the mix? Do you know what I mean? Is this scenario possible? And is Dominic McCaughey, after coming across something that I didn't really think of in this whole thing. That I knew the last game could be a dead rubber,
yeah,
but didn't really think about maybe shafting one of your rival teams.
Yeah, it's a bad example because I don't think Kerry would worry about Leash being in the other semi-final because there's no way Leash would be in the final to meet Kerry, so they can't really.
Yeah, but no, but stop this hypothetical. I threw that in as a joke.
I think I was touching on something like that before. Like the World Cup has done it.
Yeah, but if Kerry lost that game, sorry, is there a danger that somebody would overtake them in the group?
So Kerry, in this scenario,
it's irrelevant where they're worried about Leash getting through to the.
So you play three games and they've won their first two by a cricket score. Oh, you know,
if it's on head to head, then you see if. They'll have beaten them already.
But it definitely is because if Kerry, if they think if we come first, we could play Dublin, but if we come second, we could imagine it comes like that.
Yeah, so they could be looking after themselves, but in turn. Shafting another team that is dependent on them winning, you know. Yeah. Like, I mean, this it's an interesting thing if that kind of because that could get. I'm happy with the Super 8s. I think there's a much, much better master fixture plan and championship structure that could be done. But we have the Super 8s now, and I'm looking forward to that actual Super 8s part. Do you know what I mean? I'm looking forward to that. The best teams playing 4 and 4, two groups. But I didn't really think of this messy scenario where a big high profile county could actually be shafted. I don't think Gaelic football teams go down that road, do they? At club level, they don't really. Like, I've never really heard of.
You've never been involved in the relegation battle then, have you?
Right.
Well, that system exists in pretty much in so many counties now. And like you, Willie, I've never heard of any instance of teams deliberately throwing games. So, you know, to try and sabotage somebody else's chances, but again, you're the conspiracy theorist over there, which your eyebrow raised.
I've seen things, lads.
Wait, you want to have heard the conspiracy theory he came up with about the mark? Oh, he had this big this intricate thing about how teams were going to drop back because this was too, and it was all based on defence first, defensive ultras. So you're almost going to concede this because they've a good kick out lad to kick it. So let's concede that. So we're not going to win that anyway. So let's all just get back inside the 45.
We're talking about the so-called Super 8s here now, and I think there definitely is a chance that could happen. But I also I'm looking forward to them. The start, I don't really think it changes anything, but I'm looking forward to seeing the teams that will be in the 8 because. Like if it was this year, Dublin, they already hammered Monaghan and they hammered Tyrone in the semi-final. They just hammered both of those in the group. Then they would have had to hammer Armagh as well. So you'd have a nonsense enough. Maybe Armagh.
There would be two provincial winners and two qualifiers. Two provincial winners and two qualifiers. Yeah. Here, at least you're guaranteed the big game. Yeah, I understand an Armagh.
So that was Tyrone and Dublin were the provincial winners. And those two. So you could end up with a shit enough group. Like,
well, Tyrone, Dublin up in Omagh now. You know what I mean? That could be a totally different ballgame.
Right enough. I'll be interested to see, but I do think there's potential for this carry on. Like, we've seen it at World Cup level, we've seen it in Champions League. Like, you know, people know, like, doing the maths themselves.
That's the nasty professional sport, the Sepp Blatter inspired, FIFA inspired football corruption. Imagine Joe Brawley, lads, when the result comes in. You can forget about Kerry as far as they're. Cause they are. Right, well, talking about Joe Brawley, I've done a lovely little link into his. Into this last thing because this is all about Joe Brawley and he's on his Mayo bandwagon. So he went on to the Ireland's greatest sporting moments with Eamon Dunphy, and I wouldn't say these two fellas have obviously met before, but they went on that. They obviously hit it off. Eamon Dunphy, when he meets him, because he was on our show here and he met Andy Reid, and I heard him off air saying, "Andy, will you come on my podcast?" So he obviously put Joe Brawley onto the podcast. So Brawley's onto his usual stuff, and The Independent actually did about four different articles out of this podcast. So they went to town on Brawley, but he is their man. And he's going to town on Mayo again. So not the celebrity losers, he's not rowing back on that, despite the fact that Mayo have lost by a point to the greatest ever Dublin team ever. So, like, I mean, I don't know what level he thinks Mayo are at without this kind of celebrity loser type. But he's blaming it all on Aidan O'Shea and Killian O'Connor. And I thought this was a great line. It just shows the utter hypocrisy of Joe Brawley and why he's more of an entertainer than anyone that you should take too seriously when it comes to his GA opinions. Because, again, he was on Sports Joe Live. Practically admitted that he likes to do a bit of winding up here every now and then. Put a bit of stick about. So, like, I mean, for those reasons, I don't really take Joe too seriously, because if you do take him seriously, you can actually find yourself getting really angry with him. And Joe doesn't care if you're angry with him, so you shouldn't start getting angry about what Joe says. But he says this. What I meant to say is that you had a number of players who were only interested in self-promotion, and in that context it wasn't possible to win an All-Ireland. Now this is the line I thought was a classic. Because an All-Ireland requires every fibre of your being and a shared journey, everyone sticking together 100%. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but does Joe Brawley not rebel against the idea that an All-Ireland should cost you every fibre of your being and dominate your whole life. Like, I mean, is he not talking about a balanced life? You see, Cristiano Ronaldo, who's like greatest soccer player that ever played outside of Messi, me and Conan won't start arguing about this, but he constantly promotes boots, and if you get a pair of boots off your sponsor or you get a free car, you tweet it out. All GA players across all counties are doing that. So I don't see why it's a stick to beat Mayo with, but why would he say to, because an All-Ireland requires every fibre of your being, when that's the exact argument that he tries to fight against
every week,
practically every week.
Yeah, when he's
that
not
you should have a balanced lifestyle, and you shouldn't be obsessed with the game, and there should be other things in your life. And now, you know, he goes against that now as a stick to beat Mayo.
Yeah, and like some of the quotes that he has come out with over the last year or two, like it's always like, what is the point of this? You know, the time he went down on Kieran McGeaney, like, you know, they pledged allegiance to the cult of Kieran. Yeah. It really went for him, like, because
I wouldn't be surprised if he said then, because Kieran McGeaney requires every fibre of your being.
Indentured slaves. Like, you know, again, what is the point? Why are we doing this sort of thing? But it is, it's even more hypocritical if you look at Joe Brawley's playing career. If you go onto YouTube and just type in Joe Brawley 1993, and like, I'm not sort of like, obviously Joe Brawley's on the only Derry team to win an All-Ireland, so he's going to be held in high regard in that sense. But he's getting interviewed at the Winners Hotel afterwards, and Marty Morrissey brings him in and says, Joe, I told you you're going to be on RTE, and you said, great, I always wanted to be the Tom Cruise of Derry. And it's an amazing, like, if you watch a young man like on TV, and everyone in the room, he is sort of treated like a celebrity. They're sort of going, oh, here's Joe, he'll be great for TV now, like, and he's just trying to come up with these anecdotes and be a celebrity on TV sort of thing. And not there's anything wrong with that, but it's just like, that was a man who was thinking about other things.
Yeah, no, he likes the attention. Like, I mean, that's the reality. A lot of people in the public eye like attention. I don't think that's any secret or anything like that. So I think a lot of time Joe's addicted to the headlines. I think he likes winding people up, and I think that becomes a drug. When you don't have it for a while, you kind of need to keep maybe getting it. I don't know. Joe's obviously such a clever man, but I do think he's been sucked into those headlines thing. But then again, if you said this to Joe would go, Parky, you take things way too seriously. You know, then you feel like an idiot for analysing all this kind of stuff. I'm going to move on from Joe then, because I'm not going to move on from Joe, but it's just another thing, because I love, like, when it's from the same night on the greatest moments, which I wouldn't be a huge fan of. It's just cheap TV to me. But Joe Brawley and Damon Dunphy, and when you have these two fellas teaming up on the same side against a fella that you don't like as well, as I don't like Barry McGuigan, I'm going to explain to you why. When you have these two, and I saw the clip and I read the quotes, I was like, Eamon Dunphy and Joe Brawley lynching someone you don't like. What a beautiful thing that was. Like, I mean, it doesn't get any better than Dunphy and Brawley going for someone. Yeah. And I will explain to you why I don't like Barry McGuigan. Because I wanted to say this, because, like, I mean, I worked on Off the Ball for about 3 years, and he's by far the most obnoxious person that I interviewed. And it was a pre-recorded interview, and it was after Frampton fought Quigg, and it was an awful dull fight, and that was, a lot of that was Quigg's fault, that he didn't really come out to fight. It was only towards the end of the fight that he actually started coming out, and he was very defensive, and Frampton landed very little punches, right? So Joe Malloy was doing the interview and I was the sidekick. And I came in at one stage and I says, you must have been very disappointed, Barry, with, like, the amount of punches that Carl Frampton landed. You know, like, I mean, he landed very little in the fight. What the hell do you mean by that? Like, he loses the head. And I says, but, like, I mean, according to CompuBox, he only landed, like, I can't remember, I'd say, just for argument's sake, 12 punches. What the hell are you talking about, CompuBox? What's CompuBox? And I says, I was on the back foot now immediately here.
Yeah.
And I says, well, like, they're well-used statistics from boxing. Like, you see CompuBox stats, I think, like, some of the TV stations use
them.
Not listening to this shit. What kind of a picture are you trying to paint on this now? I says, take that shit out of this interview, he says. Take that out. This won't, that's not going out on air now. He says, he starts acting like an absolute baby. So we came back out and I pleaded with them to leave it in, but they obviously didn't leave it in and took it out. So this was the type of fella that I was dealing with that day with McGuigan, totally acting like a baby which I thought was a fair question, and me, not as a boxing journalist, just asking the question, not looking to be attacked on it, you know what I mean, asking an angle that I might have thought was a good angle, considering the fact that, but he wanted to put a positive spin on the fight and he didn't want me putting any negativity on it, and he can act like, so we had to cut that chunk out and put out the bit of the interview that suited Barry McGuigan. And I always say it to people when you're doing pre-recorded interviews, if there's anything you're not happy in happy about with this, we'll take it out. Sure, nobody ever really says I wasn't happy with that question. Only Barry McGuigan in my maybe 4 years in media now, maybe four and a half, him. So for that reason, when the two boys I called them, started going, and it was a classic with Eamon Dunphy, he says Pedroza was over the hill when McGuigan fought him. Pedroza was 29. So they really went for McGuigan. I don't need you to comment on McGuigan, lad, so unless you really want to.
No, I want to know more about, like, how long was left of the interview then after he had that?
It was in the middle of it. After that happened, I just stayed quiet. I was fuming. I was like, it was disrespectful the way he went mad, and because what I thought was a genuine question, and you know, I was just a sidekick, and he even rubbished CompuBox. Like, it was bizarre kind of carry on. Yeah.
Mumbo jumbo, that's that stuff.
That's the Harry Redknapp kind of thing. Maybe he doesn't believe in these stats. You have to kind of run your experienced eye over it, and that's kind of
you've seen as many boxing fights as I've had.
Don't get him started on expected goals anytime soon.
Oh my god. Right, well, Frampton's actually finished with McGuigan now, and McGuigan is actually suing Carl Frampton. So I'm just going to leave that there, and I'm not going to comment any more about that. They're two facts.
GAA news coming up.
We'll be back. That's our first divergence away from GAA, isn't it? Pretty
we had
much.
One Donald Trump divergence.
Oh, we did. We might have. Yeah, I don't want to even be reminded of that. Right, we'll be back next with John Heslin.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home about where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it three times.
It's in around there. But you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at me
of a crowded area, isn't
you're
it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in Coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
AIB, backing club and county.
All right, welcome back, lads. And we're looking ahead to the weekend's fixtures. The toughest, with getting near towards the end of the year of the toughest. So, like, it's a long road to St. Patrick's Day. And we have two matches this weekend. We've won on Saturday. So we've two matches this Sunday and we've won on Saturday. So there's an All-Ireland Junior Football Championship quarter-final between, oh God, Dunedin Connolly's in Britain and Nave Conkill of Donegal, and that's on Grafton Road, Edinburgh at 1:30. They've given me the exact address.
Edinburgh? Right.
Yeah, it's in Edinburgh, yeah. So they're in Britain. So Dunedin Connolly's must be.
There's a lad from my club playing in it and a lad from a neighbouring club as well. There's about five Mayo players. They won it last year. So, and they got beaten by a Tyrone club in the semi-final. So, looking to put that right this time around.
Right, there you go. Perfect. Lovely little bit of information there, Connor. Right, and then Sunday, we have All-Ireland Senior Football Championship quarter-final. So, this is where Cora Finn get the straw, short straw, really. When you win your provincial, you have to go away and play in a quarter-final. And they're playing Fulham Irish. That's Owen Mulligan's club. And that's in Ruislip at 1 o'clock. So you'd fancy Cora Finn obviously strongly there. But the match we want to focus on, lads, is the Leinster Football Championship final between Moorfield and St Lomans, and that's in Port Leash and Moor Park, 2 p.m. I hope the both teams will come in and have some tapas maybe after the match. It's a nice little excuse. I must get on to teams. But anyways, to help us talk about this game, I'm delighted to say John Heslin is on the line. John, I'm sure you're looking forward to Sunday. Unlike Leinster finals for Westmead against Dublin, this is one you actually have a good chance to win.
Yeah, look, we're looking forward to it. You know, you obviously look forward to any final you get to play, you know. Maybe your comments that we have more of a chance of winning this one might be valid, you know, but still, as any sporting person does, they look forward to showing their skill set on the big day. And in this sense, it's the Leinster Club final, so definitely looking forward to it, yeah.
What's the buzz like around St. Lomans? Like, I mean, you're a town club. I've played with a town club for most of my life, and I always felt that we never really got to harness that kind of village kind of, you know, excitement and close-knit community kind of thing that maybe the smaller clubs did. I don't know what it's like for you.
Yeah, well, look, funnily enough, we actually have quite a few lads from the country. I'm obviously a country lad myself, and there was a few boys out from around Clonkill area then as well. So in terms of the team itself, it's not really your typical town team, I suppose, as you'd say. Then within the club then itself, a lot of volunteers have done an extraordinary job. I suppose it's come more into my life in recent times rather than in gone-by days, and I'm sure that they did a great job then as well, but in recent times there's been a huge focus on support of the club, like, you know, say for the last game there, a couple of volunteers, Alan Bracken and Tony Robinson and Lorcan and a few other lads there, organised for all the young lads to meet, young lads and girls to meet in a location just outside the town, and they paraded up the town, flags and scarves, headbands, the whole lot before the game, like, you know what I mean? And I saw this video after, and it was just class, like, you know, and it really typified, you know, your club feeling, you know, what it means to the whole club. And I suppose you talk about a parish there, that's what it was like, you know, it was a big day, and it was just great to see the support, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'd see Austin Stack started that really with the fans marching through the town before the game, and I think in the Galway hurling final last Sunday, one of them marched down through Salt Hill as well before. I think that's a great idea.
No, it was savage. Now, and just it was a load of 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds, 12-year-olds. So it wasn't as if they were like the West Ham fans that you would have seen on Green Street or anything like that. They were just, you know, enjoying the crack and, you know, chanting and cheering, and then obviously at the end of the game they were delighted with the win. And it was just savage. I remember watching the video clip after the game, and it just, the feeling that it gave, it was just, I would have loved to have been in it as a young lad myself, you know. So no, it was definitely savage.
So, like, I mean, say for the Lowman's team, for example, because again you hear interviews from inter-county players and they talk about, oh well, this is my club, I'm playing with the lads I grew up with. Again, I'm going to use my own experience. In Portlaoise, it wasn't that many fellas I grew up with on the team. I might have gone to school with them, but, like, I mean, that's another thing with small village teams. They all would have actually palled around together when they're younger. But again, I'm trying to paint a picture of town teams. That's not always the way it is with town teams either.
No, I suppose you're right there. You know, you'd have you have three or four from maybe each age group.
Yeah.
And then you could have a gap there where, you know, a particular year of, say, the 89 born fellas, they didn't continue on, and so there's no one representing them. But you know, so it is a bit of a mix in ours as well. Like, you know, there's a couple of the older lads like Kieran Murray and Gary Glenn and Pai Dowdle, they would have all played together and they're still playing. And then there'd be the next generation then, and then after that there'd be three or four of my age group, and then the younger lads coming on, they're the same again, you know, there'd be three or four, but with gaps in between. But I suppose, you know, what makes a good team, winning or losing, is the ability for them lads to mingle and mix together and enjoy the crack. Like, you know what I mean? That the older lads, you know, get in among it with the younger lads and enjoy the crack, you know. And that's what keeps the club going at the end of the day. So, yeah, I suppose you're right. We didn't all grow up playing together. But some of us have been playing on the team now since we were, you know, 16 or 17. And we've been playing with this group of lads for 7 or 8 years. But there, as you said there, then there's the drop-offs then as well. Like, I think from the 2013 final that we won, I think there's 13 or 14 lads not playing anymore, which would be huge for us because we wouldn't have a massive panel. But there's just new lads come back in. Lads might have came back from holidays or travelling and come back into the team. So from that year we'd have had a big turnover of players, you know.
Yeah, no, exactly. So if you win on Sunday, I don't want to hear that cliche out of you that it's the lads that you grew up with when that's not always the way. Anyways, come here, listen.
It'll be the first thing I'll say.
Because I'm convinced that people, when they win matches, John, they remember other lads being interviewed after matches all their lives, and they just kind of pick up, and that's how these cliches kind of just live on forever, because nobody actually turns around to change them. But come here, you've won three in a row in Westmeath, right? And, like, I know myself from Portlaoise, you have to start dominating your own province, really, and then start looking and going, listen, we can't keep winning these and not make an impact on Leinster. So I'm not sure if that what it was like for you guys.
To be honest with you, we wouldn't have talked about Leinster really at all, like, you know. The Westmeath Club Championship is actually quite competitive, and in particular, you know, for us, a three in a row is a big thing to achieve as well, like, you know. So had we come in with the focus this year that we were going to prolong our playing season and go further in the Leinster Championship, we might have done quite the opposite and taken our focus off what was the main priority, which was to retain the championship.
But are you not winning Westmeath really handy now? Like, I mean, you're winning all your games fairly comfortably, and I think you drew your first match this year, but then, like, nobody really came close to you.
I wouldn't say handy, like, you know what I mean? We've had tough games throughout that, you know. Even in the county final there was 3 points in it until the last 10 minutes, you know, and then a goal went in and it you know, looked in our favour then, you know. But there was only 3 points in it, or 10 minutes ago in that game, so there's nothing really handy about that as such, you know.
Okay,
Like, so as I said, our main focus was to retain the championship again, because without doing that you wouldn't have a Leinster campaign. So, and then the old cliche, I know you love your cliches, but we focus on each game as it came our way.
Come on.
That one is especially for you now. But no, in truth though, that's the way you have to do it. You know, you can't take your eye off the ball. If we, like, I wouldn't imagine Moorfield are preparing for an All Ireland semi final or final as we talk. You know, I'm sure that they're focused on us on Sunday, and likewise we are with them. Because if either of us were focusing on anything else, they wouldn't be turning up to the best of their ability on Sunday. Mind you, I hope they're focusing on something else and that they take their eye off the ball, but I doubt they are.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say so. I think they haven't been in one since 2006. So, like, I mean, it's kind of, you know, I'm sure an awful lot of their players, it's new territory as well. Come here, where were you when you heard...
They've all grew up playing with each other all along, you know.
Yeah. They're a town team as well, I'm pretty sure, aren't they? Moorfield and Sarsfields are the two teams in Newbridge, yeah. Where you'd beaten Mullinahakta, a late comeback, which is a regular thing with you guys in Leinster. Well, if you count two games being regular thing. Where were you when you found out Vincent's route of Leinster, and what was your reaction?
I was actually on the pitch after the Mullinahakta game, and someone came up to me and told me that Vincent were beaten, and I gave him a stern response, and I said, I don't care who was beaten or what that side of the draw, because it had nothing really and honestly to do with us. And I know I said to you already, we were fucked in each game as it came, but Vincent had nothing to do with us unless we got to a final.
So we didn't
as a team didn't have to worry about how Vincent's were doing, or how Ratnew were doing for that matter, or any other team the other side of the draw. More importantly, we had to get word of who we were playing next, I suppose. That was the thing. Of course, you know, because of Dublin's dominance at inter-county level and their dominance at club level over the last number of years as well, you know, when you do hear that these teams are beaten, it is good to hear. Like, you know, that's just being honest, you know. And same in any sport, when a top team's beaten, or a bit of a surprise. I don't know. I think we're at new, like 14-1 or some ridiculous odds, or 16-1.
I think it was 16-1 or something.
You know, everyone loves to hear that story. So regardless of what effect or impact it had or anything to do with us, it was nice to hear that the underdog won that particular day. You know, but as I said, it had no major impact on our next game, you know.
All right, okay. That's right. No, I think Dublin or St. Vincent's were 16-1 on or something like that. But, like, I mean, that was always the big question, probably with Portlaoise, because they'd lost to Dublin clubs for the last 6 years. That when we found out Vincent's lost, it was like the biggest sickener of all times. And for me, hearing that news, immediately I was thinking, right, Simonstown, Lomans, and then you have Moorfield. So I'm not going to sound like I'm a great lad here, but I was saying it's going to be a Lomans Moorfield final, and now suddenly that's going to be a 50-50 final rather than, you know, ye going in against Vincent's, where you'd be really, really strong underdogs.
Yeah, exactly. No, so it was great for the competition, you know. It renewed a bit of excitement around it that there should be, rightly so. But I'm sure that any team that's left in it would have loved to have played Vincent's, or any Dublin team for that matter, because I'm sure as you go on in the campaign, your confidence grows and grows, like, so you wouldn't really fear anybody. But yeah, of course, it definitely renewed the interest in the competition.
Come here, I want you to talk us through the goal you scored in the county final after 15 seconds. I want you to tell me when you had goal on your mind. You obviously caught the kick out. Most people have seen it. We tweeted out a link to the goal. Talk us through it, because it's only 15 seconds. It's not going to take you too long. Tell us when you actually went, there's a goal on here.
Yeah, you've probably had a few 15 seconds experiences yourself in the football pitch and that. But look, the ball was thrown in. Just went to, you know, Paul Sherry probably had a huge impact on it as well. He was in the throw-in, and I managed to catch the ball, and just a bit of space opened up. Gave it to David Windsor there, and luckily enough he passed it back, because, you know, sometimes, you know, the ball mightn't come back when you give it and go for the return, but David Windsor gave it back. And look, I looked for a pass. Shane Dempsey made a bit of a run, looked for the pass, and it wasn't on. And then just had a look at the goals. I knew Darren Quinn's obviously an excellent goalie. He's the Westmeath goalie, you know, so I knew it had to be a good shot to beat him. So just pulled the trigger and it went into the net to our excitement, you know. But no more so than the last couple of games we played in the Leinster Championship, we still had a whole 59 minutes plus to win the game, you know. So while it was a great great moment and everything like that, I was the first person, like, I was next in line for the kickout, you know, yourself when you're playing, that the full forward line have to be ready for a short kickout. So I couldn't really enjoy it as much as I would have liked to, but no, sure, it went in, and it was a nice thing to look back on, maybe after this year's campaign, or in a few years maybe.
But how did you end up jumping for that throw in? Mustn't have gone according to plan, because you'd imagine a Sherry going to knock it down to you to maybe give in a pass to Dempsey, or, you know, if you're going for some sort of preset move. So the throw in, that didn't work according to plan. You end up with it in your hands. Would that be fair?
Well, I don't want to give anything away. The Moorfield boys are with their notepads at the moment. But look, sure, we obviously go to win it, whether it's myself or Sherry or whoever's in, Kieran Kilmurray or Sean Flanagan or whoever's in the kick-out, we obviously want to win the kick-out. But sometimes, even if a tap-down is what you're going for and it doesn't come your way, one lad's being held off or whatever, it doesn't happen, you just have to react. And my reaction was just to catch the ball, because it came that way, you know?
Yeah.
You mightn't get one as sweet as that again for a couple of games, you know, but that's the way the throw-in went, you know?
Yeah, no, it was an unbelievable finish. Talk to us about your role with Lomans then, John, because it's similar enough to maybe Westmead in some ways from me looking from the outside, as in you'll play full forward, centre forward and midfield, and you're kind of alternating between the three positions. And just wondering, when do you decide to move out, or do you decide, or does Luke Dempsey tell you to go out? Are you given that responsibility that some players have been down throughout my career, to maybe say centre forward, full forward, switch, you know, when you think it's right yourself, or how does all that work?
Yeah, I suppose it depends who you ask on the team, whether what my role is and who makes the decision, I suppose. But look, I've said it before, and it's not one of these old cliches again, but I will genuinely play wherever I'm asked to play and try and do as good a job as I can, you know. If I was asked to play centre-back on Sunday, which I might be playing centre-back, I try and do my best there, you know. But yeah, look, the way the game goes, there's no point standing in full forward if the ball's not coming in, you know. At the end of the day, you want to get on the ball and try and make things happen for the benefit of the team, of course, you know. So if that means go out and play around the middle, get on the ball and set some scores up for the other lads, then I'll be it. But you know, sometimes the call could come within the team itself, not just my call, but one of the other lads could decide, you know, geez, John, we could do with you outside, or go out there for a while, or the call could come from the line, from Luke or Robbie Kenny, Jimmy David, Frank, any one of them. So it's kind of a whole, really is, anyone can make the call or make the suggestion, whether it's listened to or not all the time is another story.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's definitely interesting, because, like, I mean, when you have a star player and he's in full forward and it's not coming in, what point do you make the break to say, here, this, you know what I mean? Like, I would have thought that you would be the one to be able to judge whether this is going to change anytime soon, rather than the sideline. So it would be maybe your decision when you would go, here, I'll go for a little bit of a forage out the field here.
Yeah, look, it's a bit of both. It is a bit of both, you know, definitely.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a bit of both.
Come here, I can't let you go without asking you about your imports, because we talk about Vincent's and we know Dublin Club Football get loads of players.
You're talking about my cattle imports or something. Cattle after buying.
Not
you're talking about people here, is it?
We're talking about people, yeah. The people you've trafficked from Offaly to St. Lomans.
Look, I can't, you know, it's not our fault if we're, you know, if we're an attractive club that people want to come and play with us. But, look, yeah, so you're talking, I suppose, Gareth Hickey, Ken Casey and Jerry Grehan would be our three Offaly lads, you know, but they're living in Mullingar, like, you know. I suppose, like Shamrocks back, I think it was in the 80s or 90s, they had a lot of lads, you know, they had Bernard Flynn and the likes of these lads, you know, that happened for them. And as you said, they were a town team, sometimes these things happen where people move, relocate for work, you know. I work in Trim, and luckily enough it's not too far from Mullingar, but if I was relocated to a place that was further away from Mullingar, I'd have to consider getting a transfer, you know. It happens in Dublin, obviously, lads coming up from the country, you know. You could have Tomás Corrigan there from Fermanagh. His work commitments didn't allow for him to travel home for training, so he had to get a transfer for the club. So I wouldn't say that we went parading through Offaly looking to see who wanted to sign for the club. because if we did, we probably would have picked a better player than Gareth Hickey anyway, you know. But no, look, it's great to have the lads, don't get me wrong. The lads have been a huge addition, both on the pitch and off the pitch. They're huge characters and they offer a lot to the team, and the morale itself, so we'd be delighted to have them. But look, we have one of your own then as well.
Oh, Billy O'Loughlin
in there from Leash, you know. Yeah, you can't forget him, and there's probably one or two others. But look, Billy O'Loughlin came in as well, you know, and another lad that has had a huge effect on the team, because his personality is magnificent and his experience playing, you know. He has a lot to offer then as well as DIT Sigerson manager, so he's a lot to offer in terms of the football, you know. But look, we didn't go up with as if we have a whole load of lads. There's a lot of lads there that have come through the ranks of the club as well, like, you know what I mean. So look, yeah, that's the day and age we're in, and I'm sure every club has a couple of their own, you know.
Ah, no, they do. And
look at Moorfield, they have the O'Connors, like, they have the O'Connors. They were born and reared in Newbridge, I think, were they?
No, they're teachers in Newbridge as well, and I think Nemo Rangers actually have a few. And you're right, it is town teams that have these, and it is Dublin teams that have these, and I suppose Dublin might get a rap because some Dublin clubs have taken it a step further than just moving into the area and actually gone out seeking players in colleges, you know, to join them. So, like, I mean, there's no doubt, there's nothing wrong with what St. Lomans are doing, but, like, I mean, it is a stick to beat a club within Westmeath. I'm sure you hear plenty about them.
There's other clubs have them as well. Like, I know Thurles Pass have a couple of lads because they're so close to the Offaly border. They might have a couple of lads from Offaly. I wouldn't even look into it myself personally. I wouldn't think it's a... If another club had a couple of lads, it wouldn't bother me in the slightest. You know, that's just, you have to deal with it. Like, you know, yeah, what I mean? It's still at the end of the day, it's who's in front of you. It doesn't matter who they are or what's their background. This is the team you're playing. Whether they've played with each other since under eight or not, really, I don't care. You still have to try and beat them, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to finish up with a nice story that almost reduced Conan here in the studio to tears last week on the podcast. Was you cleaning out the dressing room after, what I think it was, the Simonstown game or the Mullinahocta game, where the county chairman was quoted and saying he just happened to tip on back down to the dressing room there. Just it was getting dark and there was a little light shining across the field, and he gets down to the dressing room and here's the star player John Heslin cleaning up the dressing room, and John Heslin turned around to him and said, "I just wanted to do it," whatever his name was.
Yeah, so not great. It's like a story here in the Bible or something. It's like a real one you tell around Christmas, you know. But it was actually after the county final.
Oh, was it?
And the boys would tell you, I'm not a big sentimental person or anything like that, but it was, we were after winning 3 in a row. I was lucky enough to be captain of my club to do it, and really, really enjoyed the day. And, you know, in my eyes, as soon as I left the dressing room or left Cusick Park, the game was over and the moment was gone for me, you know. So I wanted to stay in the dressing room as long as I could. I was the last one leaving, as I usually am after a good game or something exciting that happened. And so I just started tidying up a little bit. That was, you know, nothing big deal. I didn't expect a big deal made of it or anything like that. I didn't ask the chairman, who was actually, it was his club we beat in the final. I didn't ask him to say anything or anything like that. It was just, it was more so to prolong the moment, because, you know, the GA, playing GA does give you some special moments. It gives you tough times too when you lose a game, or if, as you mentioned to me already, when you lose against Dublin and Croke Park by 30-odd pints, you fairly want to run out of the dressing room. You wouldn't be cleaning up that day.
No, but, that's what,
know,
I was going. That's
what, give you the special moment, you know.
That's nice. That's a nice way of thinking about it. That's what I was going to say to you. When you lose, or do you get the hell out of there, just to kind of shorten that bloody bad experience? But that's an interesting. Oh. It's an interesting way of thinking about it. Just to soak as much out of that nice day as you can.
Yeah, exactly. Because look, I suppose, and because once you win the county final, you're going on to a Leinster campaign. You know, it's important not to dwell on that win. You know. And I suppose it would have been the same against Mullinahocta and Simonstown. We won those games. You have to enjoy it in the moment, because when you leave the dressing room, when you leave the grounds, you have another job on hand, you know, and that's 2 weeks away to the next game, you know. So, look, that was all it was. It wasn't anything major, and I probably did a half-arsed job of cleaning the dressing room anyway. I didn't do a good job.
Right, well, listen, we'll leave it on that one, John. Thanks very much for giving us your time ahead of the final, and sure, best of luck at the weekend.
All right, well, thanks very much.
John Heslin's just great, lads, isn't he? Like, I mean, I texted him last week and I says, "John, will you be able to come on to the show?" And I thought Leinster Finals last week. He says, "Yeah, no problem." And then I text him back and says, "John, really sorry, the Leinster Finals is not until next week, so will you be okay taking a call the following Thursday?" And he says, "I'll have to check with the management." And then 10 seconds later, it's okay.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah. Cleaning up changing rooms.
Yeah.
He's got a role.
Ah, well, you were. Conor was sitting there and I was looking at him and I was trying to keep a straight face when he said, "You just want to get the bet, to just get that day to never end.
Prolong the moment."
Wipe it away a few tears there.
Oh,
surely.
My God.
Just a beautiful, beautiful thing. But he's great crack, John is, and he's great fun, and it's great to have someone like him who gives answers off the top of his head, has a bit of crack back with you. It's not like it's an interview and I have to be, you know, concerned about what I say here. He says nothing wrong, and I tried to actually catch him. Well, I didn't try to catch him out. I was genuinely interested in the throw-in, but still smart enough to go, "Don't be trying that one, Wooly. We're playing Moorfield at the weekend. I'm not telling you anything about what we do in the show. You know, still have the cop on, not to just go, "Well, usually every time." You know, I don't want to know that, but I'd still be interested because it looked to me like he shouldn't really be even catching that. It's just the way the wonky throw-in went. And I was trying to paint a picture of the throw-in went wrong and you're still going, you know what I mean, heading straight for goal and scoring one of the best goals you'll ever see.
He made it sound so easy though, like it's like, "I caught the ball and Ara gave a 1-2, I was lucky enough to get it back and there a bit of space opened up and I just finished it into the top corner."
But this is the thing, lads, this probably was just like that for him. Lad's a special player and he's been doing this since underage, and for him that just happened. And I saw, look, the goal, like this is him seeing, "Ah, well, I saw the goal was on." This was outside the 21 and he's beaten the goal for like 90% of players don't see a goal there. But he probably would just saw a goal because he's the ability to do that. Like, you know, like that's just the difference.
And there's about, what, 45 metres unaccounted for that he doesn't remember, going from the middle of the pitch the whole way through to the 21. It's like, that's the very best players. For anybody else to get to that point, it's something special. But for him, it's like, yeah, it's a bit of space opened up and took the shot.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like, I mean, it is a novel final. The odds in the final are Lomans are even money and Moorfield are 11-10. So it's a fantastic Leinster final considering what it could have been. And nothing against Vincent's. We're big fans of St Vincent's as a club and the way they play football. But thank God they were beaten, because now we have a Leinster final where you can watch it not knowing who's going to win. Like, that's the reality of last year. It was Vincent's against Road. I was at it and Connolly got a goal. It was inevitable, it was coming. And the minute that goal came, Road were playing pretty defensively. And, you know, it was nearly like Tyrone and Dublin. This game's done now. You know, they're done. And Vincent's just had it at their ease. Whereas now you have a game where, now one of them could win it easy, but that's not saying before the game it would be very unexpected for that to happen. Well, like I said, Moorfield haven't been in a final since 2006. I was reading Daryl Flynn there, he was doing media and Sherry was doing the Lomans media, and Daryl Flynn was saying with the team they had, they should really have been doing better than one Leinster final since 2006. They won it in 2006. I think Sarsfield's won it the year before, and Round Towers have been in the final the year before. So like, Kildare clubs were a lot stronger in Leinster then. Kildare Championship is one of the most competitive championships in the whole country, but when the teams are coming out into Leinster, they weren't, the Road were beating them, Portlaoise were beating them, they weren't at that level. So like, I mean, he kind of talks about the team they had, and everybody convinces themselves the team that they're on is much better than it is anyways, because to me Moorfield wouldn't really have expected to be winning Leinster titles ahead of Portlaoise or Dublin, who were the two best teams in the country. But I remember when I joined Parnells, I had myself convinced that Parnells would win an All-Ireland club with the team we had. I just went, well, there's a great player in that position and he's a great, I was like, this is a fantastic team, could easily put it up to Portlaoise. Then you're thinking, like, you're fooling yourself into, like, that's just players fool themselves into thinking the teams they're on are much better than they are. And I think that this is nationwide.
It's quite sober, me and Connor looking at each other. The teams aren't like, I'd say everybody listening probably is like resonating with what you're saying there. Like, you know, you do, like, because as well, like, you're involved with this team for 15 years, so when somebody a bit better comes in, it's like, Jesus, now we really have it, made, and you're not really appreciating what's outside because you're only playing them once or twice a year.
Because every player on the team is the best player in your club in that position, so you think they're better than they actually are. You know what I mean? They're not the best player for another club, you know what I mean? But you have just yourself convinced that we've a really good team this year. Nate, you might not. Sorry to burst all of your bubbles. But listen, on that sour note, for everyone listening, we'll leave it there. We'll be back next Thursday. I'll have no court that day, fingers crossed. Fingers crossed you don't want to look
see
too far
in the weekend.
And we might bring you a best of, because there's not much happening with club action wise. So we'll see what we'll do next Thursday and we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
Players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focused on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.